Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the premier radio networks, including now 184 stations in the U.S. Yeah! This show aired on June 17th, 2012. It's episode 884. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Go to Assist from Citrix. Take control of your IT world from one simple cloud-based platform. Provide live or unattended support for all your users from anywhere. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToAssist.com and use the promo code TECH. And by Ford, featuring the My Ford Mobile smartphone app for electric vehicles. The My Ford Mobile app makes the electric driving experience fun and efficient. Learn more about Ford electric vehicle technologies at Ford.com/technology. Well, hello there. Happy Father's Day to you. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's a Father's Day edition of the Tech Guy Show. We talk about all the things dads like. Cars. No cars. Computers. The internet. Home theater. Cell phones. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. 8888-826-5536. Why, after 5 years? What is more than that, isn't it? Why do I not know that? 8888-ASK-LEO. 8888-826-5536. I forget it. You know what? Forget it. Just call 8888-ASK-LEO. Or if you go to techguylabs.com, I have it written there in big letters because I can never remember. 8-8-2-7-5-5-3-6. See, I just looked at Tech Guy Labs, and there it is right there. We also have a great chat room wishing everybody a happy Father's Day. IRC.twit.tv. You could find that also at techguylabs.com. And if you're still looking for a gift for dad, I'll help you do that. That's something I like to do, spend your money. If you've got a question about a gift you got, I can help you do that too. We like to talk about anything with a chip in it, anything geeky. And if dad's a geek, well, you know, I live in an area with a lot of outdoor restaurants, beautiful weather. We're in Northern California. The sun is shining. And the place is just loaded with dads everywhere being taken out by their families, and it's so cute. Oh, my goodness. It's really cute. Really adorable. Really wish all of you dads out there a very special day. Maybe dad bought a new MacBook for himself, or maybe you bought one for him. Apple announced new ones this week. The new MacBook Retina in particular got a lot of attention. That's what they call it. I told you this last show, I'm going to call it the MacBook Elite because it's for people who are elite. It's the BMW of laptops in many ways. Price, of course. In fact, while it seems affordable at $2,200, you really have to buy the insurance on this one, the AppleCare, for another $350. Really include that in your overall price. Because this thing, according to iFixit.com, is the least repairable laptop in the history of mankind. Going back to the cavemen laptops, there's never been a laptop. Everything's glued down. Even the screen is glued down. It's how they were able to make it thin. They were able to get more battery capacity. It's quite a bit of battery capacity because they were able to, you know, jam everything together, all glued together. And then to make it even harder, they use special, unique screws called Pentalobe that only a Apple repair shop or anybody who's purchased a special Pentalobe screwdriver could open. Oh, well, we're not going to use this silly little plus screws, Phillips screws. No, that's not good enough for Apple. nor the Torx screws that we all went out and bought the last time Apple did this. No, we've invented a new screw. Oh, in more ways than one. The Pentalobe. And then, in case you were able to get a Pentalobe screwdriver, we've actually glued everything down. So, now, I don't, you know, I understand. I mean, when you buy a Retina a MacBook, you kind of have to know that going in. It's thin, and that's how they get it so thin, I guess. But you should be aware that you cannot replace the battery in this. This is much like an iPhone or an iPad. And that means, now, these lithium-ion batteries have a limited lifespan. Apple's saying you can charge it 1,000 times. It's pretty good for lithium-ion. But let's think about that. If you charge your laptop every day, and you probably will because it only gets, even according to Apple's figures, 7 hours on a charge. If you charge it every day, that's 2.5 years, and then the thing's no good. That's pretty fast for a laptop that's going to cost you over $2,500 with insurance. And you do have to buy the insurance because if anything goes wrong, there are no user serviceable parts. You can't even upgrade the memory. It's soldered onto the motherboard. So if you decide that, well, you know, it comes with 8 gigs because it is the MacBook Elite. But if you decide that 8 gigs is not enough, too bad. You need a new notebook. I guess this is the beginning of the age of the obsolescence, built-in obsolescence from computers. We've had it for cars. We've had it for other devices. I happen to like, you know, my new phone is not an iPhone. It's a Samsung Galaxy S3. And one of the reasons I really, really, there are many reasons I really like it. I mean, it's a gorgeous phone. It's bigger display than the Apple. It's higher resolution than the Apple. But it also has interchangeable batteries. And, you know, none of these phones have great battery life. But I don't care because I have an extra couple of batteries. I have a charger. Carry the extra batteries with me. Pop off the back. Put the new one in. And ironically, you know, I get a new phone pretty fairly frequently. So, when the batteries wear out, the phone will long be gone. But I still think that's important. I think that's important. You should be able to replace the battery. Now, the question I have for you, and it's a question already that Vonx, I guess is how you pronounce that, is asking in the chat room, how many people actually buy a new battery for a laptop? How many people upgrade their laptops? Do you feel, remember we used to think that was important on a desktop even. And a lot of people said, oh, I'll never buy a laptop because you can't upgrade it. I want to put a new video card in. I want to put a new hard drive in. I want to put new memory in. I want to put new. I think those days are kind of gone. So maybe Apple's not far off. Maybe Apple's right. Maybe these are appliance computers now, and there really are should be no user serviceable parts inside. Apple will replace the battery. I think it's expensive. I think it's $200 to replace the battery. So just be aware. I still bought one. I'm a sucker. Mine comes on Monday. I'm getting it tomorrow. It's my Father's Day present to myself. Yeah, that's the ticket. It's an expensive appliance, isn't it? 8888 Ask Leo. Not as expensive as the very first Apple, the Apple One computer. Beautiful wooden computer sold at Sotheby's on Friday. There's only a few working Apple One computers, I think three or four. This is one of them. $374,000. Oh, but wait, you get the manuals and the cassette interface. Now how much would you pay? $374,000. That makes the MacBook Elite look cheap. There was also a memo that Steve Jobs wrote when he was at Atari about how to improve one of their games. And it had a penciled note. It was a typewritten memo, but it had a penciled note on it. That Steve wrote in his own hand and signed S. Jobs. And that went for, what was it, $27,500. Wow. Somebody, an analyst, said recently that Steve Jobs would not be remembered. Bill Gates would be remembered, but Steve Jobs would. I think that's wrong. This handwritten note by 19-year-old Steve Jobs went for $27,500. He also wrote a Buddhist mantra on it, which translates to going, going, going on beyond, always going on beyond, always becoming Buddha. Wow. Mm. There were at least three bidders for the note, but the winning bid was $27,500. Apple's founding papers, which were signed by Steve Jobs, Steve Wozniak, and a guy named Ron Wayne, who a week or two later sold his stake in Apple, thinking, this is crazy. What am I doing? Went for $1.6 million a few months ago. Ooh. Wow. Wow. Just I think Steve Jobs will be remembered. What he'll be remembered for, that might be something up for debate, but I think he'll be remembered. A little scooplet here. But I'll have to save that for after the magic. Announcements from our fine sponsors, and I will go to the phones. Your phone calls next. 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. For Father's Day. Actually, this would be a good time to do Go to Assist. All right, I'll tell you what. Since he was talking about Go to Assist, let me talk about it too. Go to Assist sponsors the podcasts on the show. You're right. I should take advantage of this. It is you probably know of it as a remote access solution, and that's what Stephen was using it as a way to fix his client or his father? I can't remember. Is the computer? I've used it with my mom. We use it here at the office, for instance. If one of our servers, our streaming servers down in the basement goes down, I could fix it not only from here, I could fix it from home. But Go to Assist just got about 100% better. Already the market leader in remote support, they now have monitoring too. And if you want to remember the guy who wanted to get in the IT business, if you want to do what Russell does, my IT guy, you want to be a managed service provider, you need the monitoring too, because it lets you be proactive about what's going on your networks. And this is really, truthfully, how Russell can serve 855 clients. First thing you do is you install the GoToAssist crawler. It crawls the network and determines all hardware, all peripherals, all network-attached devices, and all software. You've got a full survey of what's running. Then you can customize a dashboard to monitor this stuff. You can use the built-in dashboards or set up customized ones to analyze performance, CPU load averages, disk utilizations. You can monitor toner cartridges. And then get alerts by email, text message, instant message. So there's never a problem that you don't know about. And being proactive is key to being successful in IT. You don't want to let it get to the situation where people are complaining, right? Live or unattended support, add that in and you are set. This is a great solution. Absolutely free, both monitoring and remote support right now for 30 days if you use our offer code TECH. TECH, no guy, just tech. TECH. Try it free for 30 days. I think you'll be very impressed. And if you haven't used GoAssist lately, you've got to try this new monitoring stuff. It is really cool. They actually acquired a company to do this. And I am just blown away by what they can do with this. Patch management, automation. They have they have all this great stuff. So if you have used GoToAssist, as many have, as a remote support tool, now's the time. You can support people, by the way. This is cool. By an iPad. This is just so cool. Take a look at the case studies. Visit GoToAssist.com. If you decide to try it, make sure you use the offer code TECH so you get 30 days free. Really sweet. Really sweet. I'm just glad to hear our South African callers using it. Just glitter and shine. Taught us that love was the one thing money couldn't buy. Daddy never was. Cadillac time. Country music always makes me cry, Kyle. Kyle Benham, our musical director, he's going to make me cry all day today. I can tell. I know it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, now on 184 stations across this fine land of ours. On Father's Day, talking tech. To the phones we go. The phone number, 888-827-5536. That's 888-ASK-LEO. 8888-ASK-LEO. Rick San Clemente, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Leo. Love your show.
Thank you.
You know I listen every single week, all weekend. I have a problem. I'm looking to buy, my hard drive went bad, and I'm looking to purchase a 2 terabyte 7200. I want 64 megs, a cache, a hard drive. But the problem I'm having is when I read these reviews for Seagate and Western Digital and the Hitachi and such, so many of them have so many failure rates.
Yes.
It's amazing.
And I don't think they're, you know, and what, you know, the other issue is that different companies have had problems. Western Digital had a really bad bug in its controller firmware for a while. They fixed that. Seagate has had its problems. The other problem is that they're all owned by there is only a handful of companies now. So Hitachi bought IBM. IBM used to make really nice hard drives. Hitachi bought those. Then who bought Hitachi? Seagate? I can't even keep track of it anymore.
Yeah.
So I buy Western Digital.
Okay.
I like Western Digital. Now, they have a couple of different styles. They have the Caviar Green, the Caviar Black. If you merely need like a backup drive, I get the green. It's slower, but it uses less energy. It's good in a laptop. If you really need speed, the blacks. And our IT guy here will only put – it's Caviar Blacks, right, that he will only use, John. That's it. Oh, he likes the Enterprise grade. That's because he's an Enterprise IT guy. Hitachi is owned by Western Digital. So, okay. It's all very confusing. And by the way, go to – when you buy a drive, if you're going to buy a drive, I like going – and they're not a sponsor. I wish they were – to Newegg. I think Newegg.com usually has the best prices on computer hard drives.
That's exactly where I'm looking, and that's where I'm reading the reviews. So
that's the other thing I like about Newegg. Yeah, those reviews. Those are pretty accurate.
Okay.
So 2 terabytes, and I think this is the other issue, is when you go 2 terabytes, you know, my friend Steve Gibson, who makes his living fixing hard drives, he writes a program called SpinRite, which is a hard drive maintenance utility. He says, you know, he's scared of buying a giant drive like that because the data is so compressed. I do notice that there is kind of a premium on the 2 terabyte drives over the 1 terabyte. I almost prefer two. Well, I guess not. I guess you can get, the prices have come back down now, haven't they?
Yes. Would you prefer a 1 terabyte over a 2?
If you want all the capacity, I prefer 2 terabytes. Are you going to put these internally or externally?
Internally.
So often what I do on a computer is I'll get 2 drives instead of 1 big drive, two half-size drives. The reason being I can use it, you know, I could speed things up. I can separate the data. I can have I really like having the operating system on a separate drive from the data. That makes it easier to reinstall the operating system without impacting the data. Backup is easier. You can make an image of the operating system. Let's put the operating system on 1 terabyte, single terabyte drive. You can image that operating system onto the second drive, and so it makes it very easy to reinstall. I just think that the 2 drives is nice. Now, if you really want speed, note what Apple is. One thing Apple is doing, and I think all the manufacturers will go this way, is they're replacing spinning drives like these Seagates and Western Digitals with solid-state drives, flash drives. They're much more expensive. Not a bad idea, though, in a desktop, if you have the space to have a smaller boot drive, even 128 gigs is probably enough for Windows, as a boot drive, okay. SSD drive, and then a terabyte data drive.
Okay, okay.
Right. Just some things to think about.
Yeah, because those boot, I mean, the solid state drives aren't, they don't have a large capacity yet.
They don't, and so that's why I don't put, and I don't like them for data because there's potentially write issues with writing to them too much, but I think that they're perfect for an operating system.
Okay.
And your applications. And Windows, you know, you pretty much have to put the apps on the same drive as Windows.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm going to do that.
So you're welcome, Rick. Yeah.
I appreciate it. And you have a great Father's Day. Happy Father's Day.
Same to you. It's the most wonderful day of the year. I love Father's Day. I do. Not because my kids are particularly respectful or... My son called me last night it was pretty late. It was about midnight. He said, Dad, I'm in Clear Lake with my friends, and I know we were going to do something for Father's Day, but can I stay up there? Because everybody's staying. And I said, of course you can. Of course you can. Enjoy yourself. It's summertime. Thanks, Dad. Have a great Father's Day. Neil in Phoenix, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Neil.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
I am great. How are you?
By the way.
Thank you. I appreciate your listening.
Right. We talked a while back. Ideally, built a computer end of last year, in fact, which I built. And just to tag real quick on the last caller, I took your advice, and I did, in fact, set up my system with an SSD boot drive and a 1 terabyte spinning drive, and it works great. I can put Windows in under 30 seconds.
Isn't that nice? It really is nice when you could turn on a computer, or more likely, you've just done Windows Update, and you run a reboot, and you don't have to sit there or go get a cup of coffee. It's just boom.
Right,
like
you think that the post takes longer than
I know. I know. You almost want to say stop with the post. Let's just go. No, I like SSDs a lot, and so far we have seen no evidence that they wear out faster by in any way.
Right. My question though is, and you haven't touched it recently, although you have on say Windows Weekly, is what are your thoughts on Windows 8 in a desktop machine like this where I don't have a touch screen? I mean, is it to my advantage? Is it a worthwhile? Will it be? And I know it's not finished yet, but do you think it's a worthwhile upgrade in a desktop environment like this?
Well, you got me, because on the one hand, I really want to say nice things about Windows 8 because I really admire Microsoft's willingness to take a huge chance. I mean, this is a risky thing to do, to say, hey, we've got the best-selling operating system in the world. Let's change everything. Let's really rethink it. They use the word reimagine Windows, and they did, and it is different, and it's going to drive a lot of people crazy. So I want to give them kudos. I want to say good job. But at the same time, I don't think anybody should upgrade to Windows 8. Not yet. Windows 7 is as close to perfect as Windows has ever been. I would stick with Windows 7. Watch and wait. Windows 8 is really designed for touch. One of our engineers, Alex Gumpel, is a big Windows fan. He has a touch tablet that he put Windows 8 on, and it makes a lot of sense in touch. Really does. But if you don't have a touch computer, the mousing, to me, is awkward. You have to, you know, do these weird things or learn these new keystrokes. I just think it's not ideal. I would stick with Windows 7. Truthfully, I think Windows 7 has all the functionality of Windows 8. Without that strange new interface. It's a tablet OS. I think Microsoft maybe jumped a little faster and farther than us on this one.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome, Neil. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard for me to recommend against it. And by the way, we don't, you know, it's not done. You probably should. It's free. Get the release preview, at least. Put it on some hardware and play with it. To me, it feels like a toy operating system. It doesn't feel real. I would stick with Windows 7. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Okay. That's enough. Kyle Benham, you can blame him. He's the musical director. He will put his playlist, and this should be good this week. This should be good. He'll put his playlist online on his Google Plus account at the end of the show. Kyle, BenhamKyle. And you can also get it on our Tech Guy Lab sites. James DeRuvo, who's also a proud papa and a scoutmaster. I hope, James, you're not working too hard on this Father's Day. He will put the links up there on the website, too. Let's go to Quebec. Robin is on the line. Hi, Robin. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, my goodness. He fell over.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm great, Robin. How are you?
Good. I just tripped on the way up the stairs.
That's quite all right. it's okay. Take a deep breath. No broken bones, right?
There we go. No, I'm not serious. Anyway, I have another foot. Yeah, Leo, I have a Windows 7 machine, and I'm running a NAS, and I have my music library stored on that. And the problem is, whenever I start Windows Media Player, it takes forever to refresh.
Yeah, well, how big is your library?
Pardon? I think I have 500 and something albums in it.
Okay.
It's about 80 something gigs. So I realize that's big. I just wonder if there's a way that I could just.
Well, that's kind of, you know, I'll be honest, that's bad programming.
Okay.
Because most music library programs will make an index of your songs, cache it, and then they can very quickly display the songs. And if there have been changes in the background, they can update the index and then update it.
Right, and there's just no way to do that.
Apparently, Windows isn't doing that. Well, I don't know. I can suggest some other choices, maybe that you're using Windows Media Player to keep an eye on things.
Yeah.
There's another excellent program that should work well, and I think is a little faster, and it's free, called Media Monkey.
Media Monkey, all right.
Media Monkey. I really like this on Windows.
Okay.
It does everything. It does everything that iTunes will do or Windows Media Player will do, but it does it well. It even syncs. It even syncs with iPhones and iPods and all of that. It supports DLNA, which is nice because DLNA allows you to play the music from your computer over your network to a television or some other device that supports DLNA. I have a stereo, you know, my AV receiver supports DLNA, so I can play music from Media Monkey right into my stereo from the computer. There's just a lot of nice things about it.
Oh, that sounds great.
Now, do you mount the NAS drive on the Windows machine? Is that how you do it?
Yes.
So it looks like a local hard drive to the Windows.
Exactly,
yeah.
Yes.
Well, then there would be no problem with Media Monkey seeing it. Probably, okay. It's so capable. This thing is like, this is, the problem is Windows Media Player, Microsoft really hasn't put any energy into it. iTunes, same problem. These guys are really working hard updating it. They take it seriously. It's free, but they have some gold features that might help, you know, with some of the more advanced conversion and stuff. I just think this is a great program. Media, try it and see if it fixes it. MediaMonkey.com.
I'm on my way there now.
All right.
Thanks, Leo. And
sure.
They're still playing old episodes of Tech TV up here. I watch it whenever I can. It's still great.
Oh, Rogers. Rogers, you know, the cable company up there produced the shows. We did 4 years of Call for Help in the Lab with Leo and stopped. We ended in 2008. 4 years ago. I think they figure, hey, we spent the money, we invested the money in making the shows, let's just run them forever. It doesn't matter. And every once in a while, a show will come and people, like, I remember when Amber MacArthur, my co-host on that show, introduced me to YouTube. YouTube had just launched in 2006 or 2007. She said, oh, there's this great new site, you can watch it. And every once in a while, they'll run it, and it makes us look like you just discovered YouTube?
Yeah, I know. It's not necessarily current, but it's
not that current, but it's fun. I think a lot of it actually is still germane. Thanks, Robin.
Sure. Thanks, Leo.
It's great to talk to you. Thanks for calling. Love to hear from our Canadian listeners. You can call now. The toll-free number, 8888-ASK-LEO, is toll-free only in the U.S., but I'm sure Robin was using Skype. You can use Skype to call that number. If you use Skype out, it won't cost anything. Won't even use up your credits. 8888-ASK-LEO. Alonzo in Los Angeles. You're next, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi.
Hey, Alonzo.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm good. Are you at the laundromat? Are you in the car? It sounds a little noisy. I hope you're not walking down the highway.
I'm at the car wash, getting my car washed.
So I got it kind of right both ways. You are at the laundromat and on the freeway. You're at the car wash. That's good.
Yes, sir.
So what happened? Your iPod got wet at the car wash?
No. No. My iPad got a little wet. It slipped into a cooler that had maybe about an inch of water.
Oh.
Only one side of it.
Ow!
And I'm thinking it's the end where you plug in the charger.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just... It after that happened, I realized that I pulled it out. It was inside a case, an OtterBox case. I took it out. I kind of dried it off, waited about an hour. It powered up, but once it powered up, it kind of froze, and then it shut off, and it hasn't come back on. And I was calling to see what my options were.
Well, so the real problem with the iPad, you know, whenever something falls in the water, what you want to do is remove power immediately. So if it's a laptop, not only unplug it, but if you can pop the battery, do. Now, the problem with the iPad is that battery's in there. You could turn it off if you can. That would be a good idea. Now the thing is not to use it for as long as you can. And I know it's hard to resist. By the way, I am sympathetic, Alonzo. I dipped my iPhone in a glass of water. And I should have just let it dry, right? But no, I had to turn it on. And, of course, it fried it completely. So the thing to do now is to take that iPad, and put it in something that'll dry it out. Some people use rice. Seal it in a bag with rice. Maybe put it in something with some desiccant. And don't be tempted to use it for as long as you can. Now, if you can't get that fixed, then if you can't, if it doesn't work, give it a month. I know if you can live without a month, but give it a month, and then. And then I think he's at the car wash. And then if you still can't power it up, it's going to have to be repaired. If it is under warranty, Apple will repair it, but they will know it got wet. So they might charge a little bit of money there. And my suggestion is do not take your iPad to the car wash. That would be a bad idea. Thanks, Alonzo. 8880. Ask Leo wherever you are today on this Father's Day. I hope you're having a great Father's Day. Problem with rice is, you know, there's stuff on the rice. There's powder and things. There's debris. So it, you know, it's kind of you want to kind of maybe keep it separate from the rice in there. I used, when I dipped my iPhone, I used desiccant packets. You know, all the electronics come with desiccant packets. The silica gel, right? It says don't eat it, right? Remember those? Don't eat them. You can use that. You may need to cook them. If they've been sitting in the outside air, they've already absorbed as much moisture as they can, so you might want to cook them at a low temperature overnight to desiccate them again, and then you can recover them. And then if you do that, they're good, too. They're actually the best way to do it. You know, unfortunately, an iPad or an iPhone, anything that's sealed battery, best thing to do is bring it in for repair. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Do not put it in the oven. Mmm. Yeah, baby. Car wash. If you get an iPhone, you know, the reason I got my iPhone wet wasn't at the car wash. It was I was testing a product called Liquipel that they claimed to coat the insides, the innards of the iPhone in such a way that you could get it wet. But then they said on the box, don't get it wet. Whatever you do, don't get it wet. And then they said, and if you get it wet, here's what you do. Don't use it. Turn it off. Put it on a shelf. Let it dry for a long, long time. The rice helps speed it up, or the desiccant helps speed it up. But the truth is, you know, you can't really be sure if it's dry inside. And here's the risk, and this is what happened to my iPhone. As soon as you turn it on, you risk shorting it out. And that's exactly what I did. When I did finally say, I guess this isn't going to come on after a few days in desiccant, I took it to an iPhone repair place, my local friendly iPhone repair place. He opened it up, and they literally replaced almost all the components. But they said, for instance, the SIM card was scorched, and that was from a short circuit in there, and a lot of it was scorched. And he said, well, you know, we've replaced everything. The only thing we can't replace, because you can't buy this part, is the logic board, the motherboard, and that you're going to have to bring to Apple. So I brought it to Apple, you know, the Apple store over here, and I said, hey, I got it wet. I didn't lie. Now, they can tell. I don't know about the iPad, but on an iPhone, and this is true actually of all cell phones, there's a little paper strip in there that turns color if moisture gets in the phone. So they know immediately. They don't even have to open the phone. They can look in the, believe it or not, the guy takes out a little pen light and looks in the earphone jack and says, yeah, you got it wet. He can actually see it from the earphone jack. And so he said, but I'll tell you what we're going to do. We don't have to do this, but we'll replace it for, I think it was $150. We'll just give you a new one. I said, I'll take it. Thank you. They don't have to do that because, you know, I damaged it. He said, this is from dipping it in the water, right? I said, what do you mean? He said, I saw you do that on TV. You dipped it in the water with the lip. I said, yeah. It's good I didn't lie. He saw me coming a mile away. He said, yeah, that didn't work so well, did it? No. I'll tell you what. I'll give you a new one for $150. The Apple Genius, a good thing to remember, has a lot of leeway, but you got to be nice, you got to be honest. They don't have to be to give you anything beyond what their warranty says they have to do. So, but they do have a lot of leeway. I've received emails, anonymous emails from Apple Geniuses, because those are the guys or gals you have to go to the Apple store, and they say, you know, we have to justify it at the end of the day to our managers and everything, but we really have quite a bit of leeway. And if we feel like you're nice, I remember my daughter. She felt so bad. She got a new iPhone and dropped it within a week and smashed the glass. And they swapped out a new one for free because she's cute and was very nice and was sad and crying. And this genius took pity on her. So Alonzo, might work if you just go to if it's a new iPad and you go to the Apple store and you say, gosh, you know, I feel terrible that we were at the beach or whatever, it fell and it got wet. Is it repairable? And they may well say, yeah, no, but here's a new one. They really do want to be known for good customer service because, frankly, Apple stuff costs more. They have to. That's what you're paying for, better customer service. We're going to talk to Randy in San Fernando next. He wants to start a business repairing computers or maybe something else in the computer industry. He wants some advice. We can help him, sure. Right. Randy San Fernando. Hey, Randy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yes, great show. Love you, Leo.
Thank you, Randy.
Great show. With the tech, there's a government statistic saying this, the tech repairmen will be going, will be decreasing in demand. And I was just curious if you feel that there's any business services that can be offered currently. I'm thinking about starting something in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I agree. I think that if you look at, for instance, and I started the show talking about it, this new MacBook, where really, unless you're Apple, you can't fix it. And I think that increasingly we're seeing people use devices that aren't really fixable in the way. Cars, same thing happened to cars. Remember the shade tree mechanic? They've disappeared because unless you have this very sophisticated, very expensive computer diagnostic equipment that a dealer has, it's hard to fix.
Right, exactly.
And it's even worse in computers. So here's what I do think is that more and more we need hand-holding. We need support. We need, even if you buy an iPad, there's lots of people who would like somebody to sit down with them and show them how to use it. Now, Apple does that. They offer one, what they call one-to-one support, but you have to pay for it. I do think that this is a potential business. Now, the best business, though, is not consumers, but business to business.
Right.
And that's where you'd have a lot of opportunity being, you know, doing IT, helping people configure networks. And there are a lot of small businesses who cannot afford to get an IT person. We, even in my business, which isn't a small business anymore, we still have a IT consultant. We don't have a full-time IT guy, but he's really good. This guy, by the way, Russell, I love Russell. He's got three people in his little shop. It's called Exponentia up here in Northern California. He services 855 clients.
Wow.
He's doing really, really well, partly because he's so smart. So step one, Randy, you got to be good at this stuff.
Right. Are you in the Bay Area? Is that where that
Yeah,
guy
we're in
was?
Northern California, yeah.
Okay. So you feel that there is something that
goes towards
businesses. It has to do with the information.
It has to do with setup, configuration, keeping things running, training, all of that. That's not going away.
Got it. I really appreciate your time on this. I just was curious. You're kind of the guru of this, and I was just, so you think it's very viable. But as far as the standard tech guy of yesteryear, that is not going to be obviously much in demand anymore.
You know, we have a couple of shops in I live in Petaluma, which is a little town north of San Francisco. We have a couple of shops. There's one called Main Street Computer, and it's kind, you know, you look in there, it's kind of fly spec. They got motherboards, they got cases, they got modems in the window. You know, this is the guy, you know, if you still have a PC that's repairable, you might bring it to. In fact, that's the guy I'd trust if you lost your data on your hard drive and you wanted somebody to try to recover it. That those guys are smart. They've been here for a long time, but that business is dwindling. We know that. And it's unfortunately, it's companies like Apple that have made it happen. Do you think, now let me ask Ben, because he's an IT guru. Do you think a certification like MCSE is a good idea? Businesses, he says, yeah, if you want to work with businesses, they look for some way to validate that you know what you're doing. So there's a couple of certifications that matter. There's the A+ certification, and a lot of the geeks in the chat room will mock it because they go, oh, that's easy. I could do A+, no problem. But that's a tech support certification. It doesn't hurt to have it because that's just one way a business can look at you and say, well, he's got the certs. We know that that's not the only thing that matters, but that's one way they can look. And if you're doing Microsoft stuff, that's the MCSE, the Microsoft Certified Professional. Pardon me? They got rid of that. MCITP. I'm way out of it. MCITP. There are also network certifications out there. CCNA. These certs, sometimes it feels a little bit like a scam. That you go to school to get these. It costs thousands of dollars. They help you take the test, but then you got it and you put it on your resume or you put it on your business card. And if it says, you know, CCNA, if it says A+ certified, if it says MCITP certified, that carries some weight. You go in the door there with those letters after your name. They know at least that you're not a nitwit. And maybe even more importantly, you've committed time, effort, and money to this profession. I think that that does help a little bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you? Happy Father's Day. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And it's time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones and camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, and all that jazz. This is The Tech Guy Show, where we revel in our geekiness. But even if you're not a geek, we welcome you. It's very accessible, is the point, right? We want you all to feel comfortable because this is where you learn to be a geek. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. Don't worry, it won't be painful. 8888-ASK-LEO. 888-827-5536. A toll-free number anywhere in the U.S. We also have a great chat room and website. If you go to techguylabs.com, you'll find the website and a link to the chat room there. Lots of people in the chat room on this Father's Day. I thought some people would be taking the day off. You know, if you're dad, you get to do whatever you want, right? And if that's to be in the Tech Guy chat room, so be it. Let's go back to the phones. Angelo, Ontario, California, you're next. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Good morning, Leo.
Good morning. Actually, good afternoon now. Hi, Angelo.
Yeah, it is afternoon. Hi. I'm a big fan. Thank you. Thank you for helping me out.
Thanks for calling.
I have ghosts in my in my laptop. There's these programs that I can't sort out. To give you one example, Firefox was running slow, and it a dialog box came up and said a AOL toolbar script has been misbehaving. Do I want to stop it or let it go? So I stop it, and it restarts. And so I figured I'll just find that script because I don't even have this toolbar, and I'll delete it. And the computer, I did a search. I can't find it.
Do you have any teenagers using your computer?
No.
Just you?
Just me.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, you install something like, let's say, Winamp, which is a nice little music player. And you may do it, as we all do, quickly. You go, okay. What you may not notice is that at the same time as you're installing Winamp, you're installing 18 other toolbars, including, by the way, the AOL toolbar. That's just one of... Of course, Winamp's owned by AOL. That's one of the reasons you get the AOL toolbar. But that's something that happens a lot. And you're absolutely right. These things are junk. You don't want them. You'd like to get rid of them. You looked in the ad remove programs or the programs and features control panel?
I did. And the AOL toolbar is not listed, but there's other programs that are that I don't know what they do, and I can't even remove them, but they do list them. So it's like...
Oh, that's interesting. It lists it, but doesn't give you a chance to uninstall it.
No.
Ay, ay, ay. What a mess.
I'm thinking it's like bloatware or something.
It could be. Is it a newer computer?
No, but I'm not... I'm kind of geeky to the point where I get in trouble.
Yeah, but I know that kind of geek.
But some people would just go through a brand new computer and make it pristine, and I don't have that kind of ability.
Struggle. Well, let me recommend the Revo uninstaller. This is a next step beyond what the Windows uninstall will do. There's a freeware version. You could try it free for 30 days, and there's a paid version. If you go to Revo, R-E-V-O, uninstaller.com.
Got it.
That might help you. I mean, it is a little bit better at finding this stuff and uninstalling it. And I would uninstall stuff that you know you don't want. Any toolbar, for instance, because it's really notorious for slowing down Firefox in particular. Yeah.
Hello?
Yep.
Oh, on a similar note, I was trying to find the script in the C program files.
Yeah, be careful. Be careful. You don't want to just take stuff out of program files.
Oh, because that was my question.
You want to uninstall. You want to uninstall. The other thing is if it is only in Firefox, you might want to look in the Firefox extensions. That's in the Firefox menu itself. See what's there as well. And you can often uninstall extensions there directly. Depends on how it's installed. AOL Toolbar tends to install itself throughout the computer as a whole, so that whatever browser you're using, you'll get it. But if it's a Firefox extension, you can turn it off directly from Firefox.
Okay. What are scripts?
It's kind of an arbitrary distinction. It's just what they're calling themselves. It might be written in a scripting language like JavaScript. But a program is a program is a program. I don't think you need to worry about the distinction. They're all programs running on your system. Now, as soon as you get rid of all this stuff, I think you'll notice your system running faster. The thing to be aware of is that sometimes malware on your system will do all of this too. It won't be usually won't be called the AOL toolbar, but it could be if you were a malware author and you wanted to disguise your intent, you might pretend that you're a legitimate company. So I would absolutely uninstall all this stuff. Be careful with the uninstaller, the Revo uninstaller, because maybe there's something you don't recognize the name and it turns out you really need it. So I'd be a little careful, but uninstall. There's a lot of programs. The chat room saying CamTwist does this as well. There are a lot of free programs, especially. One of the ways they make their money is by bundling in a lot of other junk. You should also make sure that you have a good antivirus running on there if you don't want to pay for one. Night Monkey's reminding me that Microsoft Security Essentials is a good start. That's Microsoft.com/Security Essentials. I like Nod 32 from ESET. It's a little bit more powerful. You also have a malware removal tool that's built into Windows called MRT. Unfortunately, I don't know why Microsoft doesn't give you an icon in the start menu for this. But everybody should be aware, if you click Start, Run, and type MRT, you'll run it. And you do a thorough scan. Now, every time Microsoft does an update, and last Tuesday they did a big update, there were a ton of patches. They also update that malware removal tool. And so that it's not a replacement for an antivirus, but it is not a bad thing to have and know about. You have it already. It's always kept up to date. And I think it's probably a good idea to run it. You can also press the Windows key and R, if you don't have run in your start menu, and type MRT, malicious or malware removal tool. Malware removal tool. Good luck. I don't think you have malware. I'm hoping you don't. I hope it's just junk. You know, I was reading a great article in The Verge this week by my friend Nilay Patel. Nilay is a really great writer, gadget writer, and he went to visit a company in Irvine called Vizio. You probably know Vizio if you've ever been to a big box store or Walmart. They make inexpensive high-def televisions, and they've just entered the PC market. And they're making really good-looking machines. But the thing that caught my eye, and I just love this, is they decided to make the experience better for the user. They make less money this way, but to make the experience better for the user, not to bundle in all of this bloatware that HP and everybody else does. Dell will charge you $50 extra not to put it on there. Vizio just doesn't put it on there at all. Now, I haven't tried their new machines. They're beautiful machines. I'm very tempted, I have to say. Laptops and desktops, very simple, very clean. And I just admire the fact that they're not putting any junk on there. They're also doing something very few companies do. Microsoft has a Windows Signature or Signature Windows program that means that it's a Microsoft Signature machine. They've tuned Windows for the hardware specifically. Now, the only thing I don't know, and if anybody's bought a Vizio and if it's been delivered, I don't know if they include a disk, because that's the key. That's the key. You need a Windows disk or at least a recovery disk. So I hope that it sounds like these guys have the right instinct. No junk on the system. It's a Microsoft Signature machine. There are very few of those out there. They spent the extra money doing that. And they forego a lot of extra money putting junkware on the system. And stickers. There's no stickers. They said, we don't want stickers. I'm hoping they come with a disc. If that's the case, then I'm going to be able to recommend these guys highly. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Welcome to the 2012 Tech Guy Olympics. I'm Jim McKay. No, I'm not. I'm Leo Laporte. I just love horn sections. That's what's missing on this show. I need a horn section. Is that a golf? What is that? Is that Kyle Benham, our musical director? Always giving me a challenge. I don't recognize that.
Live from San Francisco at the Olympic Club.
It's the Masters.
The U.S. Open.
Or the U.S. Open. Oh, the U.S. Open. That's right. That's right.
Go Blake Adams.
I am not able to hit a little tiny ball hundreds of yards and sink it into a little tiny hole, but I can fix your computer, and that's what I'm here for. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. John is in New York, where it's a beautiful Father's Day afternoon. Hi, John.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call again, I should say. I was on the show last week.
Oh, wow. You know, that's hard to do. It's very hard to get in, Mom. Congratulations. You've done it twice now.
Thank you. Well, you know, I've got a different question this time. I help out a small business owner who owns a jewelry store, a good friend of mine, and I've been suggesting carbonite to them, which they have, and they've been using now for 2 years.
Great.
However, now I've been presented with, they're very concerned about the security with carbonite, and in some ways I don't blame them.
Whenever you're storing customer data, private data on the cloud, it's reasonable to be concerned. Our friend Steve Gibson, who does a show on my podcast network called Security Now, and is kind of a little bit over the top, to be honest, on privacy and security, more so than I ever would be. He has this acronym he likes called Trust No One, or TNO. And he has looked at all the cloud services. Now, I asked him to look at Carbonite, because Carbonite's not really a cloud service. It's a backup service. But he looked at all the cloud services, like Dropbox, and he looked at Carbonite and to see whether they were truly TNO solutions. And Carbonite is. And here's how they would do that. There's an option in Carbonite to turn on strong encryption. They'll have to provide a password. That password is never communicated to Carbonite. So that means only the jewelry store can look at their data. Now, if they forget their password, they're out of luck, so make sure that they keep an eye on it. But that's Dropbox, for instance, does not support that. Dropbox will let you encrypt your data, but they know the key, and that way, if the federal government, for instance, subpoenas them or law enforcement subpoenas them, they can turn your data over. But it also means if they had a rogue employee, that rogue employee could see the data. Carbonite does not do that. Carbonite does not keep the keys. You do. In fact, I was having dinner with David Friend, and he told me, and I can't reveal anything, but he told me that they had recently had to turn down a government subpoena on a fairly big client because they don't have the access. They can't help them. So you don't have to worry about that if they turn on additional security.
And do you have any suggestions about how I would alleviate the concerns of an older crowd that is not familiar with this new technology?
Yeah, I mean, that's hard to do. You know, I get people calling me all the time saying, well, I just don't feel safe shopping online. And it's hard. You know, what I say to them is, well, do you feel safe giving your credit card to a stranger in a restaurant and he disappears for 5 minutes? You feel safe doing that? We sometimes, because it's new, make all sorts of assumptions about the risks inherent. I think they're absolutely appropriate to consider this, and I think that, but they have to listen to you when you say, no, it is using what we call strong encryption, which cannot be cracked even by the most powerful computers yet devised, as long as they don't have the password. And in this case, you have the password, not them, so only you can see this data.
All right. Sounds good, Leo. Thank you very much. Happy Father's Day, and enjoy the salad.
All right. Thank you. I am having salad for lunch. Somebody in the chat room said, it's Father's Day. You can eat whatever you want. Oh, I wish. Oh, I wish. Spaghetti and meatballs, if it were up to me. You know, and they also, he mentioned, when he talked to the call screen, they're using QuickBooks. Also, you know, you should always ascertain, here's the thing you need to ask if you want to know about this Trust No One. Is it possible for my data stored on your servers to be encrypted, that is, encoded in such a way that only I, not you, but only I can read it? Who controls the password? Who controls the keys? Now, I suppose I might as well say this. There is no such thing as Trust No One when you're using software, because you're still using Carbonite software or QuickBooks software, And you don't know, because unless you're so adept that you can disassemble the code and read what they wrote there, you don't know exactly what's in there. And it is completely conceivable, if this were an untrustworthy company — they're not, both Intuit and Carbonite have my absolute faith and trust — but if, you know, if you're using software from, you know, RussianHacker.com, it's very easy for them to write in that code something you wouldn't even see, which is automatically sending data to two places, let's say, you know, their secure server and their friends down the road. And so I understand the concern about all this, but anytime you're using the internet in any way, there is a certain amount of trust that goes on. You got to be intelligent. You got to be thinking. It's great to talk to you. Thanks for calling back. Hey, let's go to South Africa. Stephen is on the line. Hi, Stephen.
Hey, Leo, how are you doing?
I'm wonderful. Welcome.
Good. Happy Father's Day.
Happy Father. Do you celebrate Father's Day in South Africa?
Yes, we do. It's Father's Day today, and yeah, we did. It was a good one.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. Are you a dad yourself, Stephen?
Yeah, I got three wonderful kids, eh?
Congratulations.
Leo, I was just offering a client of mine some remote support using GoToAssist.
Yes!
The problem they have is that they run Windows 7,
right,
Home Basic, and 2 days ago, after starting CorelDRAW, CorelDRAW bombed out, and after that, all the icons on their desktop, the icons stayed the same size, but the text went really small.
Ew.
And you know the normal places where you go, where you're doing your icon desktops, the settings for the text size and what?
Yeah.
I'm unable to access that through the control panel. It's disappeared. It's not there.
I would guess that what happened here is that the registry got corrupt. That information as to the size of the text on the desktop is stored in the Windows registry. And the control panel, right, the appearance control panel that allows you to set that, all it's doing is setting the registry. So my guess, Stephen, is that the registry key was deleted or corrupted. And this can happen. In fact, this is, in my opinion, a severe flaw in the registry system in general. You have a massive binary file where all of these settings are stored, and any little corruption can cause just weird symptoms like this one. I would say, you could go into the registry and mess with it. You could reset that user's account. Start over, in other words. Those are kind of your two choices. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. Thank you. It was great to talk to you, Stephen, in South Africa. Matt in Rancho Santa Margarita, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for having me on.
Sure, Matt. Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
Well, I was interested in doing some live event streaming. So what we wanted to do is take there's a company in Irvine called Teradek, and they produce a unit called the Cube. So what I was thinking about doing is taking like a new Canon T4i and hooking this cube up to it via an HDMI cable, and then getting a 3G, 4G Verizon modem and streaming that to some type of software to edit it, and then stream it to, you know, Ustream or Livestream or one of the main internet streaming services.
We saw this Teradek cube at the NAB show this year, and I was very impressed. So we use something, a competitor called LiveU, that does something kind of similar. The nice thing about the Teradek is it's so small, you could actually, it has a mount for the accessory mount on your camera. You could just mount it to the camera, and then it's got the wireless built into it. Now, in this case, the Teradek uses Wi-Fi, so it's ideal if you're in a situation where you have Wi-Fi.
We're gonna be at like a remote, you know, sometimes location. Hopefully not too remote that we're not getting a good 3G or 4G.
Well, no, wait a minute now. Yeah, so don't confuse Wi-Fi with 3G. It does do 3G, but it only has a single 3G or 4G modem.
Right.
Now the LiveU that we use has up to 12, and the reason is they're bonding them together, and you kind of need that for high quality video. I would say the Teradek, now I haven't used it, it just came out, but I would say the Teradek would be great in a situation where you had good Wi-Fi, or you could connect to Ethernet. But there's going to be a big question mark about how well or how high quality it's going to be, or even how reliable it's going to be on a single 3G or 4G card.
I know they have their unit, I think it's called the Bond, that you actually can take multiple 3G, 4G modems and pair it together.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's not the Cube. So you're looking at the Bond.
Well, no, I was looking at the Cube, but then I was thinking about the Bond just for the solution.
Now, here's what happens with the Bond. It gets really expensive.
Well, that's what I was going to say. My real question should be, how can I do this even cheaper?
Yeah, because the Bond, yeah, okay, you can plug in up to five, I think, USB 3G cards. But each of those, you got to buy the card. That's $100, and it's $60 a month. So now you're talking $300 a month in bandwidth.
Right.
If you can rent these cards where you're going to be, that might work. That might be a viable solution.
Because they have the live stream has their broadcaster, I think it's called.
Yeah, there are a lot of ways to do this. Ustream uses a proprietary or a branded version of Wirecast, which is excellent. There are a lot of good ways to do this. I think it's kind of interesting because, you know, it used to be only a television network with a sat truck or a microwave link could broadcast out in the field. Now we do it with 3G. It's pretty amazing.
Right.
But you're not going to be somewhere where there's Wi-Fi. You say you're going to be kind of out of Wi-Fi range, but you might have 3G.
Well, we were looking at doing some Southern California cycling events. So
oh,
if you're
fun.
On a road course, you know, we were thinking about, again, I was going
to... Here's what I would suggest to make it simpler and less expensive. You already have probably a device that you can use, like your phone, if you have hotspotting or tethering on your phone, or maybe go out and get a MiFi, and just try it without getting this. Without getting this Teradek at this point, you could just try it with a laptop and 3G,
right?
Or even your phone. Your phone has a camera, pretty darn good camera, and 3G. I would try it that way first. If you want to try it on the phone, there are a number of streaming solutions on the phone. Justin.tv will stream on the phone. Ustream has an app on the phone that will stream. You could try it that way first. And that would be a good idea as a proof of concept before you spend a lot of money on a Teradek Bond. I think these are really cool devices. I'm very intrigued by them. But even I have some significant budget, am not using these yet. We actually, we were happy with the Live View, but I think that was $1,500 a month. It did include the bandwidth, though.
Right. Yeah. And last question, Leo, what about bringing multiple feeds together? What software?
Well, that's why you can't. Okay. You mean for switching?
Yeah, live switching. Let's say you have a course and you have three cameras. Maybe one's even like a low budget camera, and you want to do live switching. Then you would need the Teradek unit to do that. Correct.
Well, you need more than that. You need a switch in the field. And you're right. That's where live stream and others have these solutions. But that's going to be on a laptop. Let me think about this. What if all three people had phones and they were streaming back to Justin? So you had three. You're streaming as well as you would with anything else. Frankly, I mean, the bonding. You're right. Bonding works better most of the time. Although if you're moving, it's not necessarily going to be better. And it's very expensive. But let's say you want to do that. You could stream back to Justin, and then at home base, which could be your home, you could switch between those three streams to a fourth stream that is a switched stream.
Right. That's what I was thinking.
I think that
about.
Would work. But that you're right. The whole issue here is high-quality video takes more bandwidth and more consistent bandwidth than a single 3 or 4G network can provide. Now, if you're not moving and you've got a good 4G connection, you can get very good bandwidth. We've used Skype on 4G, and it looks great. But it's just not consistent. Sometimes it drops out.
Gotcha.
So it's going to be, this is bleeding edge stuff. It's not going to be the Tour de France with you on a motorcycle. I don't even know. Even when they do that, when you watch the Tour de France and they're on a motorcycle, that breaks up all the time.
Right? The satellite feeding with the helicopters. And
airplanes. That breaks up all the time. So this is what you want to do is tough. I think you should do it. You're going to be cutting edge. It'll make you famous.
We want to get into it. We have a site and
what's the site, Matt? Tell me what the site is because I love this idea.
It's cyclingillustrated.com. It's a local site we started in Southern California. So right now we're just covering the local scene here, amateur and neo-pro. But, you know, we're looking to grow. And then, obviously...
How important is live to this?
Well, right away, probably not. Because, you know, why, Leo? Everyone that would watch the live feed is already at the event. But I'm thinking, you know, bigger picture for events that, you know, people can't get to out of state.
Well, you know, I believe in this. I mean, we set up a network to do it and to do it live. But I would start not live, have people record and then cut it down and then make it available. And you could do it fast, make it available later that day.
Right.
Because live is where you go crazy and expensive. So you are going to do the Nature Valley Stillwater live, huh?
Well, no, we're not doing that. Someone else is doing it. Our team's up there right now. Cash Call, actually another Orange County company, they're actually up there racing right now in Nature Valley.
Awesome. So. I love this idea. I mean, I really do. And you know, because cycling has such devoted followers, and I think you might be able to find sponsorship. You know, what's worked for us is the more narrow the niche, the more, you know, focused, passionate your audience, the more likely you can make this viable.
Right. But yeah, you're saying forget live for now because it's too expensive, too costly. Just film it, cut it, and try to grow it from there.
Yeah, I would, because it's gonna live is gonna take a lot of patience on the part of your audience.
Right. And a T4i, you recommend going that way?
Yeah, great camera. Love it. All the new DSLRs, T4i is the Canon entry level DSLR. All of the new DSLRs have great video. I mean, and the nice thing is for cycling. You got great lenses that give you depth of field. You can get telephoto lenses. It really is a nice way to go. Hey, Matt, congratulations. This is a great idea. CyclingIllustrated.com.
Bicycle, bicycle. I want to ride my bicycle, bicycle, bicycle. I want to ride my bicycle.
Hey, Leo, you got a Carbonite live read here.
Thank you. I want to ride my bicycle. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. David in Van Nuys, you're next. Happy Father's Day, David.
Happy Father's Day, Leo.
Thank you.
It's great talking to you.
Nice to talk to you. What can I do for you?
I enjoy when you tell people to avoid... electronic juju, so I've stopped defragging my computer. But I've got a similar question.
Okay.
I have a Blu-ray player that I basically use just to play DVDs, and somebody told me recently I was supposed to hook it up to the web to download software. That sounded like juju to me. I wanted to find out.
It's actually, it's not juju, but if you're not playing Blu-ray discs, you probably don't have to worry about it.
Well, I do play Blu-ray discs and regular DVDs.
So what will happen if it is connect? You don't have to. The whole point of connecting it to the internet is, you know, they're going to say, oh, it's so we can update the software and fix bugs. We never used to do that before. Why are they all of a sudden? The real reason is frequently you put in a Blu-ray disc and it will want to update its copy protection. So that's really what's going on. So if you do connect it to the internet, sometimes you'll put a Blu-ray disc in there and it'll say, we need to go out and update our software. It's just about the copy protection. The reason is DVD copy protection, which was called CSS, was broken by a high school kid in the first 2 months. The kid's name is DVD John. He became famous and he's done quite well ever since as a legitimate software engineer. But when he was in high school, he cracked it, and the movie industry felt so burned by that. You know, it's easy to copy a DVD, and it has been since practically day one, that when they started to do the Blu-ray copy protection, they said, we can't let this happen. So one of the things Blu-ray has that DVD does not is an expiration capability for keys. So they can expire the keys once the keys get out and provide new ones, and that has to mean that Blu-ray player has to be able to go online to get the new keys.
Okay, so if I'm just using it to watch DVDs and Blu-rays, I don't have to worry about it because it's boxed away.
Absolutely, you don't have to worry about it unless you put a Blu-ray in there that will not play.
Oh,
it could conceivably happen. It's possible. I don't think they've done it yet, but they could revoke all keys.
I've gotten alerts that you can't use some of the interactive features unless you update the software.
That's what that's for. They have to give you some incentive, right?
Gotcha.
So if you want to use the interactive features, you've got to update the... But you don't. As long as your DVDs play, ignore it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're
have
welcome,
a wonderful
Dave.
Day.
It's all about copy protection. It is conceivable that at some point they will say, oh, you know, you notice, by the way, there's not a lot of Blu-ray copying software. And it's much harder to copy Blu-ray discs. It's possible, doable. I think the main reason people don't do it is because they're so big that you have to get a Blu-ray burner to copy them. They're giant, you know, there's a ton of data on these discs. These aren't the same size as a DVD. A DVD holds 9.4 gigabytes if it's dual-sided. I don't know what a Blu-ray holds, but I think it's 40 gigabytes. So what are you going to put that on? So I think the real reason that people don't pirate DVDs isn't the arcane copy protection that's on there. There's a company called Slysoft that operates out of, I think it's Trinidad and Tobago. That's why they haven't been shut down. That offers very good DVD copying software, Slysoft.com. So it's possible to copy it. I think people don't do it because it's so massive. In any event, at some point, if copying got to be a big problem, the Motion Picture Association could, in fact, invalidate those keys. See, there's one key for all Blu-ray players. They could invalidate it. And if they did that, then in order to watch a Blu-ray disc, you would now have to go online and get the new key. Hasn't happened yet. And I don't think it ever will. I don't think you have to worry about it. So as long as you don't have any trouble watching your DVDs, there's no reason to put your Blu-ray player online. They, you know, the truth is these days, Blu-ray players or TVs are all computers now. Many of them running, believe it or not, Linux. And as with any computer, there could be some software updates. I bought an Onkyo AV receiver. You know, this is basically an amp, right, with a bunch of HDMI ports. And I bought it 2 months ago. It has already updated 4 times. And it's a long, slow process. It goes out. It puts a thing on the front that says update. You press select on the remote control. It goes and it downloads and downloads. And then it takes a long time to rewrite the firmware. And then all the custom settings you put in there are all blown out. It's done that 4 times. I'm not sure updating our hardware that often is that good an idea. Yeah, no, Big Ginger is saying the master key was discovered. Yeah, of course. Somebody wrote us, remember that whole brouhaha about the master key of Blu-ray? And it was given out and it was on dig.com and somebody wrote a song and all of that stuff. It didn't increase Blu-ray piracy. And I think it won't because they're just too big. Nobody's going to pirate Blu-rays. They're just too big. 8888 asked, Leo, you don't need to update it if everything's working. Hey, let's go to one of my favorite towns. I just love the name. We're going to go to Sweetwater, Texas, and we're going to talk about Windows 8 in just a bit with Wendell. But Sweetwater, Texas. Hey, Wendell, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo.
Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
Well, I downloaded the new preview Windows 8.
Yeah, what do you think?
Well, I love it. I like it. I came into it about 4 days ago. And my email tile and my calendar tile and my messenger tile and my people tile were gone. And I can't find them. I went to search and everything, and they're gone. What did I do?
I don't know. You know, you can manipulate those tiles in Windows 8 by right-clicking on it and making them go away. You pin them just like you used to pin onto the Windows Start menu. You pin tiles. And so the tiles being gone doesn't mean that the app's gone. It's just no longer pinned to the Start page. You can see a list of all the apps. Well, I'll tell you one thing. Just start typing. This is kind of a cool feature of Windows 8. If you just start typing, P-E-O-P-L-E, it will launch a list of all the apps in Windows 8. And then you can... It'll either jump to the People app or you can find it with your mouse. And then you can pin it to the Start page. And that's what you want to do so that you'll have the tile there. I'm not sure why it went away. I don't know about that.
Okay, but just type search and it'll find it. Huh?
You don't have to even type search. This is one of the nice features. I did not know about this on Windows 8. But if you just start typing, before you're on the Start page, right? And you start typing, it will launch... On the right, you'll launch the search automatically, And I started typing people and immediately found, after PE, it found the People app. Or you can, you'll see on the right, you'll see a list of all the apps. You can click that and find the app that you want. And then you right-click on it and you say pin, and it will pin it to your start page. And then it'll be there. You'll have your People app back.
I typed in People and it says no apps match your
search. Uh-oh. Sounds like your apps are disappearing. I don't know why that'd be.
Well, that's what's happened to me, and I can't find them. I don't know what.
Well, I'd say reinstall at this point. That's not happened to me, and I'm not sure why they're disappearing. Remember, this is a very early beta. It's the release preview. It's not even the final version. So I would probably just reinstall. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, is that it? Looks good. Wait a minute. Let me put the over the head. Come closer to me and turn around. There it is. Corey's wearing it. Looks good. Very nice. You like it? Comfortable? Right on. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here on Father's Day. It's time to talk technology at 8888 Ask Leo. 888-827-5536. If you've got a question, a comment, a suggestion, you want to talk high tech, that's all I'm here for. I'm here for you, baby. Got to thank Corey who brought cupcakes by for Father's Day. Cupcakes have become a fine art, haven't they? This is more than just, you know, a muffin with icing. These things, there's a red velvet, a carrot. They've got a bacon-flavored cupcake, coconut, lemon, cherry cheesecake. Wow. That's a work of art. These are like the cupcakes that you have in like a dollhouse. These are hunka-munka cupcakes. Mmm. Let's bring the site down. It's already down. Siftcupcakes.com. I guess you can order cupcakes on the internet. What will they think of next? Thank you, Corey. Very nice of you. Clyde in Torrance, California, you're next. Hi, Clyde. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Am I okay on the speaker?
Yeah, you sound good.
Okay. I'll try to make it real brief. What about networking with a dial-up? I have a disabled friend who lives with a disabled 80-year-old mother. They both like to stay online, but they're trying to stay online with LA Freenet. It isn't free, and he had a problem, and you can't get anything. And he doesn't know if they want to go for, you know, a low-cost broadband. He's a technical person, fellow ham, tries to keep the stuff going, but it's
Freenets are great. They're non-profit. They're very inexpensive. They're run by volunteers.
Yeah.
So you kind of, you know.
You can't go online to get it straightened out.
Yeah.
It's the library.
Yeah, it? Yeah. I mean, I really like the idea. The idea of the Freenet in L.A. has one, but they're all over the country, is that they're kind of offering the lowest possible internet. Although, I'll be honest with you, it's not as inexpensive as DSL Extreme. So,
well, I wonder, yeah, how long is that DSL Extreme introductory price good for?
1 year.
1 year, and then where are they going from there? I never can figure that out.
I am not sure. They start now in most areas, not every area, but in most areas at $12.95 a month for the first year. What I would do is call them, because this is absolutely better than dial-up. And frankly, at that price, it's less than dial-up. But you should be aware of the fact that you know, this is a teaser price. They'll get you for a year. It's not like 1 month. It's a year. And then I think it goes up to $20. But I'm not sure. You should ask them.
I have a spare wireless in router. It's kind of a second-tier airline. But I can give him that and get him going, and he'd have to be the person in charge of the network.
Yeah. I think that, most of the time, once you set it up properly, not much to do. It just works.
Does that vary according to what you're doing? I don't think they're going to Netflix or sending pictures.
Well, you should be aware the DSL Extreme $12.95 is not, 8 gigabytes a month. I mean, a minute. It's I think that they're 784K. You should ask. But you can call 866, the number 2 GetNet. They are a sponsor. I should just give you the disclaimer. And they'll fill you in on the details. But for $12.95, you get more than adequate speed for email and surfing. Probably inadequate for watching Netflix.
You wouldn't even try to network from a dial-up. I know there have... seen stuff online, but it looks rather complex.
No, I wouldn't. I really wouldn't. I think you got to get DSL. Low-cost DSL is a pretty good deal. It's pretty easy. It's pretty straightforward. The chat room saying that the $12.95 deal is $128K up. Again, that's too slow probably for Skype, but fine for surfing, and $768 down.
Okay. And $768 down.
Now, if you go to, I think, $15, just a little bit more, then you can get 1.5 megs. So you just, he can always upgrade it too. I mean, if he finds it's too slow, he can. He can.
It's worse than slow. Okay.
Well.
All right.
Yeah.
I want to plug in.
Yeah. Thank you, Clyde.
My wife says that you are understandable. She's had to listen to a lot of other computer gurus on the radio on Sunday afternoons, and she's you're the one. She's not a techie.
What's her name,
if I were
Clyde?
If you're younger, I'd be a nerd.
What's your wife's name, Clyde?
Elizabeth.
Elizabeth, thank you. Very kind of you.
Anyway, that's the story.
And you know, Clyde, it's kind of you to help your friend. I think that that's really one of the things that's kind of incumbent upon us as geeks.
I'm a geek and an Elmer, so.
Oh, you're ham too. That's fantastic.
49 years.
The nicest people I've ever met now are hams, and the most helpful. And that's what they call a ham, an experienced ham who helps a novice like me. They call him an Elmer.
Yep. Are you going to have somebody else take over on field day?
We got to do field day. You know, I forgot about that. And we have a very nice ham set up here, so I don't think I'll be out on field day, but I will certainly we'll fire up the radios. Maybe somebody can come over and be doing field day for us.
Well, thanks very much, Leo.
Thank you so much, Clyde. I really appreciate it.
I look for other problems.
Take care. No, I think this is really nice. That's the culture of the ham culture, which, by the way, is the original geek culture, is, I think, very much has been replicated by the original computer and digital geeks. That culture of helping, of bringing along people who are new. Unfortunately, in any area where there's expertise, there are always going to be those people who are more interested in showing how smart they are than in helping other people. And often they do that with jargon, and they obfuscate, and they, oh, well, you know, your real problem here is that you need to get it, blah, blah, blah. And it's too bad. But I think hams have really got it down right. If you want to meet people who are just generous and nice, go to visit a ham rally and It's just very cool. Now, we do have a show, by the way, if you are a ham or interested in ham radio, called Ham Nation on our Twit network that I just love. We do that show every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. You can watch live at twit.tv or go to twit.tv and you'll find Ham Nation there. And that's a great show for beginning hams and extra special hams. Congratulations to Web 3001, just passed his extra exam. I'm a general, but I just don't have the time to do any hamming around. Field Day is an annual event that the Amateur Radio Relay League does. It's a weekend. It's next weekend. And that is a chance for hams to go out for, it's basically emergency preparedness exercise. So they go out and they test their portable radios. They test their remote equipment. They set up away from their big power lines and their antennas to make sure they work. And this is a very important day because when there are emergencies, whether it was Hurricane Katrina or the tornadoes in Alabama, the hams leap into action and they really do provide emergency services. They connect the world. I was up at the high school, which is on kind of a mountaintop up here. I serve on the board there at the high school, and they were talking about emergency preparedness. And I said, "Well, you have a ham radio operator, right?" And they said, "No." And I said, "Well, what happens if the phone lines are down? You're up on the hill. There's been an earthquake, and you don't know if you should lead the kids back into town. You need a ham radio. You need a ham up there. So I'm gonna help them. We're gonna get somebody certified up there. I'm gonna give them one of my handy talkies. It's really important." Because when the phones don't work, when the internet doesn't work, when the power is out, That's when you count on a ham. So that's exciting. We'll do something for Field Day. We should do something for Field Day next weekend. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. We are going to, all the hams in the chat room now are identifying with their callers. I'm W6TWT. We're going to get back to the phones in just a bit. The website, techguylabs.com. All the notes are there, everything we talk about. Thanks for being here. Happy Father's Day, dads. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I say daddy loves you, baby, one more time.
Yeehaw.
She says I know, I think I've got a bite. And all this laughing, crying, smiling, dying here inside's what I call living. And she thinks
happy Father's Day, everybody. Dr. Mom in our chat room saying her daughter just got 4.0 average in her quantum physics finals and has a paid fellowship in plasma layers. I bet dad's proud. There's nothing like the being a father and being proud of your kids. That's just a great feeling. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Andy in Prince George, British Columbia. Beautiful area. Hi, Andy. How are you? Welcome.
Hi, Leo. Long-time listener, long-time geek. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Listen, Leo, I have a PVR with the local satellite company, the Bell Express View here in Canada. We have some videos, some movies stored on the internal hard drive. And we'd like to get them off the PVR in order to keep them for long term. I'm wondering if you might have any suggestions on how we might go about that.
Yeah, this is a source of great frustration to people because the PVR has, or the DVR has, a hard drive in it. And you know that the video is stored on that hard drive in a form that if you could just put it on your hard drive, you could then burn to a disk and save forever. But because the television and movie companies are terrified that that's exactly what you'll do, most of the time, they encrypt that data on the hard drive. It's not in a format you can use, and they rarely give you a way to get it off. Now, there's TiVo to go, and there's other solutions like that. In some cases, that's offered. I don't know if Bell offers you that. My guess is no. Usually, you'll pay a higher fee, and there's some limitations to it. If you don't have some officially sanctioned way of getting it off the hard drive, unfortunately, there probably isn't any good way of doing it. Now, I wrote a book some years ago for TiVo users on how to get your data off the TiVo, but all of that has changed dramatically. This was the early days, TiVo 1 and TiVo 2, but by the time they got to TiVo 3, it was so heavily encrypted, there was nothing you could do. You'd had to use the TiVo to go or nothing. So if Bell doesn't offer you something, then what you have to do is take advantage of the so-called analog hole.
Yeah.
And that is, in order to play back on your TV, the PVR has to have a connection that plays on the TV, and if you put something on there instead of a TV that looked like a TV and pressed play, you could record it.
Yeah, so they offer an external hard drive that allows you to save to the external hard drive. But I believe that hard drive becomes married to the receiver after you do such a thing.
Right. So it doesn't matter that it's inside the box or outside the box. It's still inaccessible.
Right. So when you say analog hole, wouldn't that be considered, in essence, pirating the movie?
Well, it is, and one of the reasons, you know, they've tried many times in the U.S., I don't know what the Canadian Parliament's doing, but in the U.S. legislature, they've tried many times to block that analog hole, and there are technologies that they use. On the old VCRs, they had something called Macrovision. If you tried to play it on an unapproved device, it'd look, you know, you get up jagged lines and so forth. On the HDMI port, they have something called HDCP, High Definition Content Protection. And it will downgrade the quality if you're not playing it back on an approved television. But most of the time, if, for instance, you have a component out of that box, which I'm sure you do, that's the red, green, blue cables that come out of the back of the box, you plug that into a capture card on your PC, the box isn't going to know that you're not watching it on TV. It's an analog. And they kind of allow that because, well, A, it's hard to stop, and B, the quality isn't as good as if you were just taking the digital.
Yeah, right.
So they, in most cases, you won't have any trouble doing that. You'll need a PC with a video capture card that has some sort of input that's compatible with the output on your PVR.
Right. Okay, well, I thank you very much for your help. I just want to, can I make one comment, please?
Sure.
I notice you have the cupcakes in front of you, but yet you're having willpower and eating that salad. Way to go.
Hey, I got a long way to go, Andy. If I ate those cupcakes, it'd be a big step back. Thank you for the encouragement. I appreciate it. You sound like a guy who's lost some weight yourself in the past.
Yes, yes, I have. Thank you.
Congratulations, thank you very much. Andy. All right, thank you. Take care. Long way to go, baby. Long way to go. David in Reseda, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah, hi, Leo. I wanted to see if you can give me a free antivirus to download from Windows.
Sure. The best one is from Microsoft. It's called Security Essentials. If you go to Microsoft.com/Security Essentials, you do have to have Windows, is it Vista or later, or does it work on XP? It does work on XP. Okay. You can't go to Windows 98, but Windows XP or later. It's actually pretty good. Microsoft bought an antivirus company called Giant. They updated it. They've made some considerable improvements. And in fact, in the next version of Windows 8, they're going to include an antivirus, actually some really good security software. I think Security Essentials is the best free choice. You know, there's others like AVG and Avast, but frankly, I don't think they're as good as the one Microsoft offers. So just use that one. It's free. I do think that if you pay, you get a little bit of a better antivirus. I'll talk about Nod32 a little bit later on. They're a sponsor. But so, you know, I want to give you the free choice. Generally, the paid ones are faster. They sometimes have more capability. But I understand a lot of people just don't want to pay for an antivirus. And this one is pretty darn good. Mick, Gainesville, Florida. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mick.
Yeah, how you doing, Leo?
I'm well. Happy Father's Day.
Oh, happy Father's Day to you, too.
Thank you.
I've got a two-part question for you about the iPad 2.
All right.
My wife and I have had one for a few months now, and we have a broken screen.
Oh, nuts.
I know. Isn't that crazy? It's nuts. What we're looking to do is get that screen replaced. And we've looked online for a number of different resources.
And I'll tell you why. This is the same problem that we have now with the Retina display, is that Apple is gluing the glass to the LCD. So, you know, on a laptop, in many cases, you could put a new LCD panel in if the LCD fails. On the new Mac Retina displays and the iPad, they've glued the glass to the flat panel. And it cannot be removed. If you bring it to Apple and you say the screen's broken, they'll say, no problem, here's a new iPad. They will not fix the screen. It is not fixable.
Really? Because we took it to a place in town, and they said they could replace, I forget what they called the actual piece that would need to get replaced on it, but they said they could remove it and put a new one on.
Yeah.
And they were going to charge about $200 or something, but I didn't know if that, I guess they...
I'd go to the Apple store first and ask them how much to replace the iPad. It might be less.
Wow.
Now, you know, it is possible. If you go to iFixit.com and read up on this, you'll see if they have to use a blow dryer to melt the glue... And pull the glass off the panel. You have to be able to find a panel. Now, maybe what they've got is they've got the unit all. What they may be doing is buying used iPads and taking the entire glass and digitizer out and replacing that. And I would like to see some samples of their work. It seems to me that really Apple has designed this to be non-fixable. Now, if you look at iFixit, you see what is possible, what is doable. They have a repair manual for the iPad, too. I don't know how effective it is. Apple's really decided to make these things not repairable. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I guess... Nick in while we were talking to Nick in Gainesville, Florida, about replacing his iPad, I went to the iFixit site. I just love these guys. I just don't mind giving them a plug over and over again because they're the only people in the world I know who tear this stuff down. And Kyle Weens, who started this site just out of the love of it, has really made it a business, which I think is great. The guides are free. So they call it the free repair manual that you can edit. It's ifixit.com. And if you look at, just so you understand, if you look at their iPad repair, they have 65 guides. Pick the iPad 2 that you want to repair. Let's take the iPad 2 AT&T version. And they show you how to change everything, including the LCD. So let's look at that. So step one, the iPad 2 is an extremely difficult device to open. Before attempting this guide, be aware that you may break your front panel and or deform the plastic bezel around it during the opening sequence. Use a heat gun to soften the adhesive securing the front panel to the rear panel. Try not to allow the stream of hot air to contact the thin plastic strip around the outer perimeter of the front panel as it may melt. I mean, that seems like we could stop right there. But if you have a company that's done this a lot, because you need to do it a lot, first five you break, first 10 you do badly, maybe by the 20th or 30th you can do this adeptly. Use your heat gun to heat the edge of the front panel giggity near the bottom right corner of the pad. Gently slide a guitar pick around the edge of the bottom right corner of the front panel, being careful not to force it, and reheating the panel if necessary. The whole thing's glued together. There are no screws. And I'll be honest, I doubt very much Apple does any of this. If you bring it in and it's broken, they go, yeah, and they throw it in a barrel, send it to China, and give you a new one. They just don't make these to be repaired. And that's controversial. I mean, we have people in the chat room saying, well, they don't make toasters or microwave ovens to be repaired. I might beg to differ on that, but the point being that this is an appliance. It's not designed to be upgraded, repaired, or fixed. It's just designed to be thrown out. That seems like a bad idea. But there you go. So, Nick, $200 to fix it, if this company has a good reputation and seems like they know what they're doing, that might be a good idea. But I would check the Apple Store first. If the Apple Store says, no, we're going to have to sell you a new one for $500, then take it to these other guys. What do you got to lose? $200, that's all. Now, Stu is in Lutherville, Maryland. He says he knows how to burn DVDs from TiVos. Go ahead, Stu.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm really great.
Really appreciate your show. You're doing a great job.
And I appreciate your calling because I get this question a lot. How can I get my movies off my TiVo?
Actually, there's a piece of equipment out there. It's on its seventh version. It's put out by Magnavox right now. I apologize. I am not sitting in front of my computer. I'm out on the road working. But it's a Magnavox. I think it's an MDR 515 is what the current number on it is.
Okay.
And what it is, it's basically a DVR hard drive. It's got a 500 gig hard drive on it. It'll hold up to 620 hours of programming, and it also has built into it a DVD burner.
Ah.
So, do you have it on the computer?
I'm looking at it right now. So okay. The idea is that you can record. Can you match this to your TiVo? Plug it into your TiVo.
Basically, it's just like a VCR would be. That you basically output through RCA cables, yellow, red, and white, into this. You can output out of a VCR, out of Dish Network, out of Comcast cable boxes. Anything that's got a box that'll output like that, you can put directly into it. And it'll record. You can record it onto the hard drive. You can save up to 600 hours. And then whenever you want to burn a DVD, you basically go into the menu. You say, hey, take these three movies, these three, hour and 45-minute movies, and burn them onto a DVD. You can say, do it fast, and it'll actually record 5 hours and 40 minutes worth of movies onto one DVD.
So instead of using a TiVo, you need to use this, or you need to play back stuff from your TiVo into this.
That would be the option. You'd play off of your TiVo onto that. You'd be recording it real time. So right. If you have a show, you'd record it onto there, and then you can burn it onto DVD and make as many copies as you want.
So it is actually taking advantage of the analog hole I mentioned, because it doesn't have a digital input, or does it?
Right. It does not do digital. It does not do high definition.
Right.
It will not copy anything that is copy protected.
Right.
But it not only would take care of all these people trying to get things off of a DVR,
sure,
or off
sure.
of a But the other thing it helps out and would work with is these people who have home movies and want to put them on the DVD. You can just play the tape, burn it onto a DVD.
So this is, yeah, that's perfect for people who don't have a computer already. They want to record this stuff and want to burn a DVD. It comes with a DVD recorder, and then you could put S video into it, composite into it, or the best quality, which would be component video into it. That's pretty close to digital quality, not quite. And then you can burn it directly. You don't get to edit it. You just get what is on the hard drive there. But that's a lot easier. And these are under $300.
It's a great unit. This is actually like the seventh generation of it. And I own like four of them right now that I've been using for years. And yeah, they're all great. And they always claim that they're about to stop production and they're not going to make them anymore. I guess because of copyright infringement, whatever, but they keep churning them out, and I keep buying a new one and another 600 hours worth of movies and programming getting stockpiled.
Stu, I really appreciate it. Thank you for the tip.
Hey, not a problem, Leo. Thanks an awful lot. I really appreciate your show, and have a happy Father's Day.
Thank you. You too. Really appreciate it. Yeah, I think this is essentially the same idea. If you already have a computer and you have a video capture card, you'll be doing the same thing. It's in a DVD burner. But if you don't have those things or you just want something that just kind of works, kind of out of the box, this essentially takes advantage of the analog hole. You play back your video into it. It records it on its own internal hard drive and then has a DVD burner built into it. Prices range. I'm seeing pretty wide variety of prices. The current one on Amazon is $400, and now we're getting a little bit steep for this, especially if you already have a PC. And yeah, I think that it's probably the case that there's a lot. I don't know if this is the same as the original Magnavox. It's not. It's Funai. Funai is a company that bought the Magnavox brand. I don't know if they're are they Japanese or Chinese? It sounds like a Japanese name. They bought the Magnavox brand. Magnavox is long gone. But the name lives on. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. We've got a few more minutes to go before the show is over. And we will then continue to answer your calls. I got Don coming up at Laguna Beach. Wants to attach his telephone to his computer. Also, wants to clean his computer before guests visit. We'll talk about doing that in both cases in just a little bit. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number on this Father's Day. I'd also like to know what you think about the idea of disposable technology versus, say, recyclable or reusable. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. If Funai sounds Japanese, I don't know. They own Magnavox, the Magnavox brand. I bet you Funai makes all of these for all the companies.
There are very few things that are a bigger waste of your time than going to the post office. I'm not telling you anything.
You know, it depends what you're doing. The video capture software built into Windows is fine. Windows Movie Maker. If you want to get a little fancier, do more editing perhaps, or make some menus, that kind of thing. I like Adobe Audition, or rather Adobe Premiere Elements. That's under $100. That's a nice choice.
Using that free digital scale. Stamps.com also saves you money because it's a fraction of the cost of a postage meter. Plus, you get discounts you can't even find at the post office. Up to 21% on express mail, 15% on a priority mail. Great for eBay sellers. They actually take the eBay data and fill out the forms for you. Same thing for international mail. Oh, you got to try this. Right now, use my name, Leo, for this special no-risk trial, $110 bonus offer, including that digital scale and up to $55 free.
Our show today with any luck brought to you by Ford Motor Company and the fantastic, I don't know if you've seen it, Ford Focus 2012 Electric. What I really am amazed by is this app, this Ford, what do they call it? The Ford, My Ford Mobile app that they have on this 2012 Electric. Very, very cool. Lets you do things like control the charging remotely from your smartphone, your BlackBerry, or your Android, or your iPhone. It has the value charging feature powered by Microsoft. That's kind of cool. It What that does is it says, hey, only charge this during off-peak hours. Look at this. Mike's EV is at home charging. 51% charged. You can find, this is cool, charging stations. And even plan your route around the start charging stations or the most eco-friendly route. See, he's going to the grocery store. Very cool stuff. The software in the car also does a lot of this, which is great. And there's a website too with leaderboards and more, so that you can kind of know, how much CO2 have I saved? Am I the number one CO2 saver in my cohort? I have to say, I'm really impressed with the way Ford has taken consumer electronic technology, put it in their vehicles, and made it just really sweet. You could precondition the car's temperature before you get in, so it's exactly the... This is kind of cool. Exactly the right temperature ahead of time. Right there. You know, if you are buying a Ford, don't tell your Ford... You could tell your Ford dealer, but the best way to do it would be to tweet... I know Scott Monty on Twitter watches carefully if you do at Ford, and he's always paying attention to those tweets. We get tweets all the time. People say, oh, yeah, I heard about my Ford Electric on Twit, and I just want to thank you for sponsoring Twit, and I bought a Ford. And that's always good if you do that. That makes them happy. It's not necessary to the success of the campaign, but I like it if you do that. Ford.com/technology to find out more. And I think it'd be so cool to have that 2012 Ford Focus Electric. But then, you know, next year they got the 2012 plug-in hybrid, the Ford Fusion Energy. And eventually all of these Ford vehicles will have gasoline, diesel, hybrid, plug-in hybrid, and electric options. That's the goal. They do have a hybrid. They've had a hybrid for some time, CR1. It's called the Fusion. Really sweet stuff. Just really love it. Ford.com/technology. We thank them for their support of our little efforts here. They've been really great. A great companion. Hey, welcome. Kansas City. Nice to see you.
Sorry about that. Jeez. All right, your last live read's not 32.
Okay,
just relax, take it easy. You're still young, that's your fault. There's so much you have to know. Find a girl, settle down.
You're just trying to make me cry all day, aren't you?
Can marry, look at me. I am old, but I'm happy.
Cat Stevens. Father's Day 2012. Glad you spent Father's Day with me. Thank you.
And I know that it's not easy to be calm.
A few minutes left in the show. Let's take a few more calls, starting, as I said, with, let's see, who's next? Who's been holding on the longest? Don in Laguna Beach. Hey, Don.
Yes, hello, Leo.
Hello,
thanks,
welcome.
Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I appreciate all the help you provide. Hey, I'm handicapped, and I use Dragon Speak with a Bluetooth. It's working good for me.
Great.
But I would like to plug my landline into my laptop and answer my telephone and make phone calls. Have you got a software for me?
This used to be very common, you know, when we were still faxing way back when. You could get a modem, which was, of course, for dial-up internet access, that also faxed, and they had modems that had voice. So these voice modems would be sitting on the phone line. Incoming call would come in, and then the software would pick up. You could do voicemail and so forth. It's funny, because as faxing went away, voice modems also kind of went away. There are a few companies still making these. But they're just not as prevalent as they used to be. That's what you need. It's because you need a way to interface between your computer and the phone line.
So my laptop wouldn't work even though it has a phone jack.
It would not, because that phone jack is probably designed just for a regular data modem.
Uh-huh.
So you need to buy a voice modem. You know, I think Zycel probably still is around making them. ZXY. No, that's spelled so strange. XY. Z? XYZEL? XY. No, that doesn't sound right. ZYXEL. Thank you very much. Thank goodness I have a chat room and a studio audience. And yes, they're still around. ZYXEL. But get this, they charge like hundreds of dollars for their voice modems.
Boy.
You know, it's crazy, and I guess it's just because lack of demand. Now, many of these are external. Let me look at this one. This is the Omni 56K Com Plus. Dial-up internet, data, fax, and yes, voice functions. So that's what we want.
So would I need a software with that also?
Yeah, well, more than the software, you need an RS-232 port.
Oh,
I bet your laptop doesn't have one of those unless it's pretty old. I wonder if anybody makes a USB voice modem. That would be a solution. Let's see. Let me just do a quick Google search. USB voice modem. Yeah, apparently. TrendNet. So there are a few. So these are good solutions.
I'll look into those.
Yeah, so you'll plug it into the USB port on your laptop. And they're not very expensive. I see one from Sewell. USB voice fax 56K modem, $17.
That's in my range.
Yeah. Now, most of the time, this stuff came with software. I don't know at $17 if it would, but most of this stuff came with software. Amazon's selling it, so let's see what the Amazon spec says, to see if it comes with software. If not, there are a number of companies that still make voice calls from your PC, send, receive. Most of the time, these will pick up. You could do voicemail. This is exactly what you want.
Great. Secondly, I want to put an old laptop in my guest room for when family visits, but I want to clean it up with my data and, I guess, get my profile off of there.
Yeah. You probably should just wipe the whole thing. Do you want to continue to use it as your computer?
No. Uh-uh.
If, you know, you could create a guest account, and if they logged into that guest account, they couldn't see anything that was on your account. That'd be the fastest and easy way to do it.
All right. That's,
but if you wanted to wipe it, you could, you know, get the Windows disk or the recovery disk that came with the machine and wipe the hard drive out. If it's a really old system, put Linux on it, and it'll be more secure. They'll be able to use it as a browser, and that's about it.
All right. Thank you, Leo.
You're welcome, Don. Yeah, if you don't have a phone connection, you know, you don't have a phone line, there's lots of VoIP solutions, including Google Voice, Skype, Magic Jack, Uma. There are a whole bunch of ways to do this using data only. But I gather that Don didn't, in fact, have high-speed internet. He had a voice line. He wanted to use that voice line with his computer. Now, Eric in Hermosa Beach. Hi, Eric. Thanks for your patience. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Thank you, Leo. As your call screener said, I have a problem with a drive that disconnected and then won't mount now. Disk Utility on the Mac sees it, and
that's interesting.
Verifying it.
Is it an external drive or an internal drive?
External.
All right.
Two terabyte.
So probably what's happening, it's USB?
Yes.
Probably what's happening when Disk Utility sees it is it's seeing the USB interface, but it may not be seeing the drive. So the case that's around the drive, it can see that?
It can see the drive, and it can check it, and it says it's got a volume error, and it says it repairs it, but it won't mount. And then if you do verify again, it'll see the problem, repair it, but it goes endlessly. And I tried it on two machines, does the same thing on both machines.
Yeah.
And my motto is first do no harm. So I investigated a little bit. It looks like Disk Warrior and SpinWriter are the two programs to go to. And then the question is whether cloning the drive will hurt it for SpinWrite.
My strong suggestion would be if you have a friend with a PC, because you can't do this on the Mac, but if you have a friend with a PC, is to take that drive out of the USB case. It's probably a SATA drive, which means you could pop it into the PC.
Yeah.
And don't use it through USB because USB kind of gets in the way of SpinWrite. And then run SpinWrite on it. What SpinWrite does is it doesn't care about whether it's Mac or Windows, doesn't care about the file system, doesn't know anything about the file system. All it does is tries to read each sector one after the other. If it has a hard time reading it, it will move the data off the sector and block it, you know, mark it unusable. And it's very persistent, much more so than the operating system. So it'll keep trying to read it until it finally gets data off of there. And in most cases, this will fix the hard drive entirely.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I'm saying, yeah, the file system's corrupted. That's what Disk Utility is telling you. But it's probably because the file system has parts of it sitting on sectors that are damaged.
Yeah. So is it going to hurt it to clone it first? Will that interfere with SpinWrite?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
It may not work because the clone software is not persistent, right? So it'll try to read a sector and then just give up.
Yeah.
That's why for some kinds of errors, SpinWrite is the only, you know, really solution. And you don't need to worry about cloning it if you're just running SpinWrite. SpinWrite's non-destructive.
Yeah, okay. Because what I was thinking about is having more than one option.
Yeah. Now, I haven't tried Disk Warrior, but my opinion is that it's not going to do the same thing. Disk Warrior is, in my memory, is file system aware. So it's going to try to repair the file system. And in this case, I don't know if it's going to be very successful. And that could be destructive, by the way, because Disk Warrior will now be writing to the drive.
Yeah. So that would be a reason to clone.
Definitely clone before you use Disk Warrior.
Yeah.
But cloning is not necessarily the perfect solution because you cloned it, but if you can't copy every sector, there's stuff missing in the clone. Good luck, Eric. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great Father's Day. We'll see you next week. Take care. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.